the final and Friday lunchtime talk of term. I'm Charlotte and I help organise these talks. And Pete Woodcock is going to come and speak to us in a minute on the title, Why God Hates Religion. Pete works for a church in Kingston and he's going to leave a time for questions at the end, so save them up and ask them then. I'm going to read the passage that is on the screen now and then we'll start. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted.
Thank you for that. I'm going to answer this question by us having a look at this passage. So I hope you can all see it. You've got young eyes. Can you see it right at the back there? Good. That's excellent. I don't think there's anything more humiliating than expecting someone to know you or to give you a sort of favourable response, and they don't. They totally ignore you. It's quite embarrassing. I remember being at a wedding once where there was this woman, while we were queuing up to see the bridal party, going on and on and on about she's going to be sitting on the top table. And she was boasting about it and going on about it, how she knew these from there when they're little kids. And then we got to the wedding plan thing where the tables are, and she was well off the top table, right down below. I think she was a lower number than I was. And it was just embarrassing. You could see her annoyed, embarrassed, and all of that sort of stuff. It will be terrible, isn't it? Wouldn't it be to base your whole life on something, believing something, and yet it to be completely wrong? That's sort of a little bit more than embarrassing, I think. Or let me give you an example. Imagine those terrorists, those suicide bombers, religious suicide bombers. I mean, whatever you think of them, they're a remarkable people in many ways. I mean, they're leaving their loved ones, their families, sometimes young families, you know, loving wives, caring parents, and they strap bombs around themselves, and they think, and surely they're genuine about this, they genuinely think that to blow up people, to cause mass murder, mass maiming, they're going to be ushered into the presence of God, a smiling God, who's going to say, well done. Come into my presence. Come into my paradise. They genuinely think that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that, would they? I mean, they're fairly committed to that thinking. But imagine the horror if God didn't say, well done. Imagine if God said, you wicked, evil person. Away from me. I don't know who you are. I didn't ask you to do that. It's more than embarrassing, isn't it? Now, this is why I think this little parable that Jesus told, it's in Luke's gospel, and you're going to be offered gospels a little later on. And it's a wonderful story. And I think it's important because it's dealing with our subject of why God hates religion. It will deal with it by the end. I hope you'll see some reasons why. But it also deals with that whole business of people that just get it wrong. They get God wrong because of religion. And that's what it's sort of dealing with. There are people, this passage is saying, that really think they can carry on the way they are, they can be religious and so forth, and they'll have chiseled on their grave, rest in peace, or, you know, gone to a better place. But actually, the reality is they haven't. That's the sort of thing that's going on here. You can see why Jesus told this parable. It's in verse 9, that first sentence up there. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. He's telling this parable about religious people. That's what that first sentence says. And so let's have a get into it. just for a few minutes. First thing I want us to see in this is you've got two people in this parable. Two people that Jesus introduces. And there's a great contrast between these two people. They're sort of at polar ends of the religious spectrum, if you like, these people Jesus paints in his story. The Pharisee, clearly a very, very religious person, you know? If anybody's going to be right with God, the Pharisee is. And then he's most pious. I mean, the Pharisees were the most pious movement. The word Pharisee means set apart. You know, so they're set apart for God and they're set apart for following what they think is God's laws and all of that sort of stuff. But then you've got this other bloke, a tax collector, and he's the scum, right? He's bad news. He's working for the occupying army, the Romans, so therefore he's a traitor. He has given allegiance to Caesar over God, so he's pretty anti-religious. He's a thief because he was allowed to make money out of people because the Romans, part of his making money, he could overcharge and all of that sort of stuff. Now, we make sort of sarcastic jokes about tax collectors. They actually lynched them, okay? So he's a despised, he's a hated, he's a scum, he's after money, he's denied, he's not religious in that sense. Pharisee, really good bloke. You'd like the Pharisee as your neighbour. You know, maybe not socially, but, you know, he's a good bloke. He's not going to be, you know, when you're off, he's not going to be nicking your stuff. Tax collector as your neighbour, you want to do some locking up, you know. Lock your bike up, because he'd be after that. Someone said this about them. As to occupation, you've got noble versus base. As to bearing, you've got proud versus shameful. As to self-evaluation, you've got self-confident versus cringing. Jesus paints these two people, opposite ends of the religious spectrum, if you like. And in doing that, he's asking this big question, how do we get right with God? How is it anyone can be in a right relationship with God? How do you view that type of thinking? What are you relying on to make you right with God? That's the thing that's going on here by giving this comparison. So they've got things different, these two types of people. They're at the other end of the religious scale. But there's some similarities in the story. You've probably noticed that. They're both men. That's pretty similar, I suppose. They both do two things in sentence 10, in verse 10. They go up the temple to pray. So they're both people that are sort of into praying in this light. And then in verse 14, we're told they both go home. They both went home. So, you know, that's what they've got in common. There seems to be something in them that wants to get right with God, because verse 14 seems to sum it up. I tell you, this man rather than the other went home justified before God. They want to sort of be right in God's eyes, both of them, to some degree. So the question Jesus is asking here, who is right? Who is going to heaven? And Jesus answers it, verse 14, look at it. I tell you this man, which man? The tax collector, the scum. I tell you this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God, right with God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. What Jesus is doing is totally disorientating his hearers. It's like he's turned everything upside down. What's he talking about? The devoted, set-apart Pharisee, the good neighbor, the good bloke who's doing all this religion, he goes home with nothing from God. God's not interested in him. The other bloke, who's a scab and a traitor and, you know, has lived a rough life, he goes home right with God. Now, that's an amazing thought, isn't it? It's an amazing thought. How could that happen? And how could the Pharisee, the religious person, be so utterly wrong when it comes to thinking about God? How could he get it so wrong? You see, the difference between these two blokes, it's not just at the other end of the religious spectrum. It's not just that one is a sin and the other isn't, because actually the Bible says that every single person, religious or not, are sinners before God. So it's not that. The big difference between them is how they think you get right with God and what God thinks about how you think you get right with God. That's the big difference. What are they trusting in? What is it they're committed to? Are they following what God is into, or are they just thinking God is into this? It's that sort of stuff. You get me? You do, anyway. No one else does. I'll just talk to you then. And you see what they trust in. You see what they're committed to. You see what they really think about God by their prayers. So, two people, two types of prayer. Look at the prayers. Look, it's brilliant. It's so, I love Jesus because he's so wonderful in speaking deep truths so wonderfully simply. Their prayers reveal what they're really about. Here's the Pharisee, the religious bloke, right? We're asking a question, what does God think of religion? Well, here's what God thinks. Here's what Jesus thinks. He paints the picture of this very religious bloke. And he goes to pray. Now, he's full of confidence. And yet it's a false confidence, I think. Look at verse 11. I'm just not convinced you can see it, but I'll read it out anyway. Verse 11, the Pharisee, religious bloke, stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you, I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. Now, it's interesting because this was originally written in the Greek language. And the Greek actually says this, the Pharisee took up his position. Right? So he comes into the temple and he takes up his position. It's a religious position. He's doing, in those days, the religious position for him was to stand up, but it doesn't really matter what the religious position is. It might be to kneel down. But he takes up his religious position. He's wearing the religious gear. He's confident. He's posing. He's got the right gear on, he's of the right nature, he's from the right family background, he's done the right things, and he's posing, as religion does. He's going through the religious motions. And he thinks because of that, God will be pleased with him. He's got the right gear on, he's wearing the right clothes, and he's got the right position. Then look at verse 11 again. He prayed about himself. I mean, what's that telling us? The focus of his prayer isn't God, not really, is it? Although he starts with the word God, but the focus of his prayer is himself. I mean, he says God, and then you can almost forget God, and he talks about himself. I mean, look at his prayer. Look, God, now forget that. I, thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, and give a tenth of all I get. This is a soliloquy. He's actually talking to himself. In fact, actually, the Greek, the original, you could translate, he stood up and prayed about himself. You could translate it, he prayed to himself. You know, this is a monologue. He's just speaking to himself. It's a bit like, you know, we were talking about sports there, but it's a bit like when you know, an athlete, they're psyching themselves up. I mean, they're not really praying, are they? They're going, you can do it, you've eaten the right pasta, and you've gone through all the right program, and there's the end, you can see the end, and you can win. Come on, come on, come on, you can do it. It's all that sort of psyching up. That's the sort of thing that's going on here. He's coming to the temple to pray, and he's sort of saying, I'm a pretty good bloke. I'm a really good bloke, actually. I'm not a robber. Are you? You a robber? You nicked anything recently? Well, you see, you'd be in line for this prayer. You know, I'm not a robber. Or, you know, I'm not an evildoer. I'm not an adulterer. Anyone committed adultery here? Hands up. Well, there's a hand going up there. I saw it. All right, so you're not this bloke then. But, you know, the rest of us might be. I'm not like this tax guy. Look. It's a bit like going to the doctor. Imagine you go to the doctor, you wait in the waiting room, you get the little number comes up or whichever doctor you go to, and you go into his surgery. And he says, how can I help you? You say, well, actually, you can't help me. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, I've got good blood pressure, and I'm very fit, and I'm healthy, and I've just come in here to tell you that I'm all right. In fact, I'd want to tell you I'm a lot better than all those people queuing up outside. I mean, there's a woman out there. Oh, dearie me, you're in for a baddie there. I mean, she's rotten. She was sniffling and sneezing and coughing and all kinds of horrible smells were coming from her. I'm a lot better than them. Anyway, thank you very much. I'll be off now. I mean, that's stupid, isn't it? Here's the Pharisee. He comes to the temple to pray and he congratulates himself that he's all right. There's a false... He never asks God for anything. He just tells God what he's like. Look at verse 14. Sort of tells us what verses 11 and 12 are about, really. What his prayer is about. Right at the end, Jesus says, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." He's boasting. He's talking to himself. And he's full of religion, and God ignores him because he's ignoring God. There's no relationship there. He's not talking to God, he's talking to himself. He's just doing a religion. Do you think God's happy with that? But not only is there a sort of false confidence, he has a false comparison. He compares himself falsely, or rather, he compares himself with the wrong person. See, the comparison he picks on is the bloke who's not as good as him. Religious people always do this, by the way. It's almost impossible for religious people not to do this. There's a comparison. I do these things, she doesn't. She doesn't, I look good. It's one of the reasons why British people love Hitler. I mean, when foreign people come over, they say, "Why are you talking about Hitler all the time?" We love these despots. We love these mass murderers and rapists. It's why the British press call them monsters. And, you know, what they've done is pretty horrific, of course. But it makes us feel so good because I'm not a monster. You know, I didn't pick people up in Cambridge in my taxi and rape women. I didn't do that. You know? So I feel so much better, and there's always someone I can pick on. Now, I must be able to find someone who's more rotten than I am. Religious people are always doing that. I mean, look at the way I dress. I said to a very religious person the other week, I'm not saying this is good, and, you know, I'm sure I had a wrong motives, and I confess that I'm wrong in all of this, but I saw this bloke really religiously dressed. And I went up to him, and I said, "Hey, I reckon... that you don't know anything about God by the way you're dressed." And he said, "How dare you? I dress like this because I know about God." I said, no, I reckon it's the wrong way around. I reckon you don't know anything about God just by simply the clothes you're wearing." He said, "I have a beard." I said, "Yeah, that's what I'm saying." "You haven't got a beard." I said, "No, I haven't got a beard. That's what I'm saying. You think having a beard and wearing this gear is getting you right with God, don't you? Jesus wouldn't have worn jeans." I said, "Well, if he was around today, he probably would, but I don't want to get into that argument. It's not the point. What I'm trying to say is, I may well have been wrong." Actually, it did go a bit nasty, the conversation. He got really, really angry, and I had to sort of say, "Oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to offend you, but I did want to just talk to you." His whole commitment was the size of his beard, the very fact that he, in this particular faith, had cut the hair here over his ears, short hair, long beard, and he was wearing a particular type of linen. And he thought that got him right with God. And you challenge that, and he was really angry. That's what's going on with the Pharisee here. I thank God I'm not like other people. And look what I do. God, do you see what I do? And there's sort of an accounts thing to God. Look at what I do. Honestly, I've got a good account with you, God. You know, I'm not guilty. You know, not only do I not do the things that bloke does, but actually I've fast twice a week, which is 103 times more than I need to. It's amazing, isn't it? That's how committed I am. I'm only asked once a year to, in my religion, this Pharisee, to fast, but I do it 103 times more. I think I've probably got the maths wrong there, but it doesn't matter. See where he's going? In other words, God, you must like me. You must owe me because, look, I've put lots of money in the slot machine and you should give me the chocolate bar, but not him. It's that sort of stuff going on here. See? Look at the tax collector's prayer. The tax collector's prayer is completely opposite. He doesn't pose. He doesn't strut around. Look at verse 13. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He's fairly ashamed of himself. He knew he's guilty. He knows he's rotten. He really does not deserve to be there. He knows that. The tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast. And all his prayer was, God. Starts off with the same word as the Pharisee. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Actually, the original Greek is, have mercy on me, the sinner. He's right in his assessment of me, that Pharisee. I am a robber and I am an evildoer. And I am an unpleasant person. And I am the sinner. He's absolutely right when he points to me. I don't deserve. I can't stand up like he does. Have mercy on me. See, that's the first step to knowing God, is to know that you are a nothing. You are rotten. And you are guilty. And actually, you can do nothing. You can do nothing to make you right. However much, there's not like, oh, I am rotten, so I've got a lot of religious side, and I'll put that on, and that will cover up the wrong. No, I haven't even got that in me. I've just got nothing. I'm the sinner. See? But he goes on. Let me just say this. I'm nearly finished, but he goes on. He says, have mercy on me. Now, the little phrase he uses is it's not the common word for having mercy. It's a very specific word. And it basically means this: be mercy seated to me. Which reminds us of a whole load of stuff in the Bible, which I've no time to go into really. But basically, it was the place where the blood of the lamb, a sacrifice for the sinner, was placed on this thing called the mercy seat, so God would actually forgive the broken laws. So in this thing called the tabernacle, you had this box called the Ark of the Covenant. And in that box, you had the Ten Commandments that were broken. You know when Moses came down the mountain? You may not know, but that's the story. The rules of God were broken. They were in the box along with some other stuff. And in this very special holy place, you had two angels, as it were, there were golden angels, looking down at the box with God looking into the broken law. But a perfect lamb that was on behalf of the sinner who put his hands on the lamb. He put his whole weight on the lamb. Come here, be a lamb. Lamb represented him. It represented all the wrong he'd ever done. Stand up a little bit, lamb. And what the bloke would do, he would take it, he'd take its head. He would take a knife. Where's my bag? He would take a knife and he would slit its throat. It was awful. The lamb would be shaking as the blood came out. Thank you very much. The lamb would be shaking. And the blood, that lamb was representing him. He should die before God. What this bloke is praying is, Lord, be mercy seated to me. And all of that, of course, is a picture of what Jesus came to do on the cross. Lord, it is not what I have done in religion. There's nothing in me. I need a savior, not a set of rules. I don't need a religion. I need a redeemer. I don't want a whole load of laws because they only cover up my sin and not cover them up enough before you. I need a rescuer, a savior. I need mercy. I need someone to take my wrong and die for me. That's what Jesus did. And that is why God hates religion, because religion is anti-Jesus in the end. Religion takes you away from Jesus. Religion says you can make it on your own. Religion ignores that God has sent the mercy seat, that God has come into this world and died on a cross. Religion says, yes, I know all that, and I quite like those stories, but actually, basically, I go to church and I fast and I do this, and I'm not like them. It's what you're trusting in. And the Pharisee was trusting in himself. That's why he prayed about himself. And the other bloke, the tax collector, said, I'm nothing. I need you. That's the difference between Christianity, Jesus following, and religion. And the response, two types of responses. Verse 14, I tell you, this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. He's the one that God is pleased with because he's trusting what God has done for him. For anyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Religion, you see, you can't help but say, I am doing this to better myself. I love Lewis, C.S. Lewis. Listen to what he says. Whenever we find that our religious life is making us feel that we are good, above all, that we are better than someone else, I think we may be sure that we are being acted on not by God, but by the devil. The real test of being in the presence of God is that you either forget about yourself altogether, or you see yourself as small, dirty object. Have you ever seen yourself as that? Well, how dare you speak to Cambridge students like that? I mean, we're the elite. I mean, come on, I was brought up in a good stock. See what you're trusting in? But I'm going to get a degree, a decent degree, you know? See what you're trusting in? Well, I'm a very religious person, you know, I do all of the religious stuff. See what you're trusting in? Well, I'm not like them. I've never murdered anyone. See what you're trusting in? And God says no to all of that. He says, I hate that. Because none of it will cleanse you like the act I've done for you in Jesus on the cross. And if you ignore my darling son coming to this world for your religion, I hate religion. Okay. We've got a few minutes for questions, but just have a minute to think some of that stuff through, and then I'll try and answer questions. We haven't got long, so I can never be deep in the questions. That's my excuse. but I'll try. I'll try and answer some questions. But, you know, the best people that answer the questions are the Christians here. And, of course, the best way of answering a question is to read one of these Gospels that Charlotte's going to offer in a minute. Have a think. Have a look through that passage. Oh, it's slipped down. Has it slipped down? Oh. Maybe I've grown taller. Okay, questions, comments, disagreements? Yes?
So, I found there was two kids.
Yeah.
And one of them is your religious kid, who does everything right, makes breakfast in bed, the others does the nice thing.
Yeah.
And then the other kid punches them or does something bad.
Yeah.
And then apologizes to the father.
Yeah.
And the father says, you're good. And the religious kid says,
yes. Great. That's a wonderful question. Thank you. So I can't repeat all of that because that's a bit long. But there's a father, he has two kids. One kid is a sort of wayward, you know, nasty brute. The other's a nice one. What's the answer to that? The answer to that is, Jesus tells you the answer to that. And it's Luke chapter 15. It's exactly that story he picks on. And he shows that the religious bloke at home, the good one, stays at home. He tells a story. It's often called the story of the prodigal son. Yeah? And then there's the baddie who asks for his inheritance. He says, stuff you, father, I want. He said, when do you get your inheritance? When your father dies. In other words, I wish you were dead, dad, because I want that now. So he grabs the money. He goes off into a wayward place. He blows it in foul life. It's really bad. He comes back stinking of pig, you know, which is a very bad thing if you're a Jew, because he couldn't get a job, you know, and he envied pigs, okay? So there's the story Jesus told. He comes back. And the father says, out of pure grace and utter kindness and utter love, because the father pictures God, I will redress you, I will wash you, I will bring you back, and we will have a party. The son, the good son who stayed at home, well, apparently good son, he then goes off on one, and he says, I've done this, I've done that, and you never gave me this party that you're giving to this bloke. And the answer was, you never asked. And the answer was, and he says, I've done, and Jesus places it and says, I have slaved for you. He never had a real relationship with the Father. It was one on works. It was one on what I have done, and the Father didn't want that. So the answer to your question is in Luke chapter 15. You can take a Luke's gospel up there and read it, because God is the God of grace and kindness, and he calls the sinner back and the wrongdoer back, and you need to be able to say, I am sorry. Now, if you're saying he just casually says sorry so he can carry on with his life, that's not what a real Christian is. That would be nonsense. But the older son didn't realize how far away he was from relationship with the father, even though he stayed at home and was the good boy. He saw the father as a slave master. I have slaved for you these many years. Okay, read that. That would answer your question. That's a great question. Thank you. Another one, quick. Yeah, sorry. It depends what you mean by religious practices. I mean, if it's a religious practice to read the Bible, it's a great thing to do, to read the Bible, because that's where you hear the word of God, so I'd encourage you to read. If it's a religious practice, if you're calling prayer a religious practice, then pray. But if you're doing that in order to win brownie points or some kind of points for God, then that is religion. You trying to work your way to God by doing various things, and that won't work. But, you know, some people, and we're brought up in different cultures, like to do things in different ways. So some people will like to dress up when they go to a church building, put a suit and tie on. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. They feel that that's what they like to do. Others like to sort of dress down when they go, because normally at work they're dressed up. So, you know, it's a sort of way of dressing up, but dressing down. So there are all kinds of those. But if you are trusting in those religious things, if you are saying, this is what makes me a better person because I pray more than you do, or this makes me a better person because my beard is bigger than your beard, which it would be if I allowed it to grow. at least I hope so, for your sake. If I am saying my clothes therefore make me more of a godly person, I'm going to wear clothes to identify me, to show me as something separated from you, then I'm saying that's wrong, God hates that. Okay? Another question. Yeah. Yes, because it's a relationship with God. We love God. And because we love God, we become his children, we're told in the Bible. It's such an intimate thing, Christianity. It's not just a religious stuff you do and you become a sort of just a follower. I mean, you are a follower, but, you know, it's we become a son of God. So we pick up some of the DNA of God. Because Christianity is actually a supernatural faith. In other words, it's not just me believing a set of rules, it's God busting into my life, changing me, and making me, over a period of time, of course, more and more like his son Jesus, and I'm like the brother of Jesus in that sense. So I want to be like the father. It's the best way to live. So the parable of the prodigal son, the son realizes that the wild life wasn't as wild as he thought. It was far better to be at home with the father. It was security and love and care and growth there. And so a Christian is someone who begins to become, it's a slow process, but become more like Jesus. And I want to be, because he's my father. I want to follow my father. It's a love affair. So, for instance, so you'll notice, years ago now, my mate, best mate, yeah? We were a bunch of blokes together, yeah? Suddenly, I thought, something's odd. He walked in the room, he'd washed his shirt. It was an ironed shirt. Something's wrong. What's going on? Girl in his life, you know? A girl had come in his life. And suddenly, he's going shopping. I mean, we were blokes. Blokes were blokes in those days. You don't go shopping. You go smacking about. You go fighting. You go messing around. You don't go shopping. He was shopping with a woman in sort of dress shops. Now, you said to him, are you mental? You're giving up the mates for her. But he never saw it like that. He saw it in a different way and married her in the end. See? Is that it? Okay.
Thank you so much for coming. This is the last Friday lunchtime talk of term, so I won't see you next week, but these talks will be happening every week next term, so it would be great to see you there at those. There's only one thing that I'd like to encourage you to do this week with the holidays coming up, and that is, as Pete's been saying, that I'd love you to take away a gospel. They're on the table by the door over there. They're completely free, and I'd love you to take one and read one. They look like this. So they're really short. They'd only take a couple of hours to read. Just take one and start there. And maybe kind of read it over the holidays, or you could ask one of your Christian friends to read a bit with you and chat it through. It's part of the Bible, and it contains kind of an account of Jesus' life, which, as Pete has been saying, is kind of what Christianity is all about. And I find it amazing how many people just write Christianity off without actually having looked as an adult at the kind of the actual account of Jesus' life, the evidence for his claims. Please do take one of them and kind of intend to read it in the next couple of weeks. And if you've come by yourself and would like to chat about a gospel with someone, then write that on your feedback card and we can sort that out. Pete will also be around at the end, so if there are kind of immediate questions that you want to ask him, do grab him them. Otherwise, please do fill out the feedback forms that should be on your seats. Stick around for cakes by the door and have a lovely holiday.